Well, those scammers never seem to rest. They now have started sending text messages to cell phones with hopes of infecting them with malware. Hi, Jill Nadeau here, filling in for Larry Mueller. Back with us are Sandy Chalmers, Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And they have information on all the latest scams and can help you out with your consumer problems and complaints. What questions do you have? Give us a call. Our number, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Hi, ladies. Thanks for being back with us again.
Nice to be with you, Jill.
And so we're talking about sending text messages to phones, and they're calling this smishing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, this is something that we talk a lot about with email spam, and oftentimes criminals will pose as a bank or a credit card company in order to get you to send them personal information, which then they can use to commit ID theft against you. Well, we're seeing a spike in the number of spam texts that are being sent to phones. And these messages may say there's a problem with your bank account or suspicious ATM withdrawal, or sometimes they'll promise you a gift card from a major retailer like Walmart or Best Buy. The message usually will either include a phone number to call, and if you call that number, you'll be asked for personal information like a bank account number or a credit card number, or there may be a link in the message, and if you click on that link, your phone is likely to be infected with some kind of malicious software of some kind. So that's something to be on the alert about, but as always, our tips are never respond to a request for personal information, whether it's a phone call, email, or text. You have to use the utmost caution in sharing that personal information.
So pause, think about it, right?
Mm-hmm. Before you share that personal information.
And that little screen is not the easiest to read either. So I can see where people would fall for that a little bit more.
Well, we're in such a habit of, you know, you get a text and you respond immediately.
Right.
And that's part of the draw for the criminals, because they're counting on you not thinking and just clicking without pausing, as
okay.
You said.
Great. Well, and another type of scam is called spoofing, and the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection hotline is not immune, apparently. What happened with that?
We are not immune. So we have talked about spoofing and not trusting your caller ID. So a scam artist can make any phone number or name appear on your caller ID using technology if they want to. And last week, we fell victim to this. There were a number of calls made throughout the nation that left our 800 number on people's caller ID. So many of them called the number back to see who was calling and why, and they got us, so we were aware of what was happening. But some of them who answered the phone because it looked like they were receiving a call from a trusted source, the state's Consumer Protection Agency, responded to the phone call and were told that they were being called about the Do Not Call list or various other types of solicitations, where again, someone is trying to either obtain money from you by you engaging in some kind of financial transaction, buying something, or that they're trying to get your personal information and confirm different things. So we can only say again and again, don't trust that caller ID, because anyone can make something appear on the caller ID so it looks trusted. We don't make phone calls from that 800 number. We only receive calls from consumers, businesses, whomever, to provide them information, get them complaint forms. That's our service to the citizens of Wisconsin. If we need to make a phone call, we're going to tell you who we are, why we're calling, do it from one of our local exchange phone numbers as well. So, yeah, we're not immune from being spoofed. And we just tried to get the message out there within hours of finding out that it was happening. So instead of calling back the number that comes on the caller ID, because you never know who you're going to get, it's probably a better idea to Google the phone number to see if there's a scam going on with that phone number. We tried to get our consumer alert out there. So if you Googled our 800 number, you'd get the alert and know that we knew we were spammed as well. So that's one way of handling that.
Okay. You know, social media seems to be pretty much a hotbed of fraud these days. Do you have some tips on what we should be looking for when we're out on Facebook and Twitter and all that good stuff?
Yeah, we just talked about malicious software being downloaded to your phone or device when you click a link. That comes in an email or text. Well, that can happen on Facebook and Twitter and other social media as well, where somebody, a criminal, will send you a direct message. Sometimes they may pose as a friend. But so be extremely cautious about clicking links in social media messages. Sometimes there will be kind of an enticing message along with it saying, can you believe this? Or have you seen the latest? Or that kind of thing. So handle those with caution. On Facebook, a lot of times you'll see ads for profile viewing tracking, who's been viewing my profile. That's not a Facebook type of software, and that will usually lead you to requests for personal information. And then just another reminder, there are a lot of surveys and quizzes, what dog breed am I, what state of the union am I, you know, that kind of thing. When you fill out those quizzes, whoever's behind that is gathering personal information about you, whether it's your age, income, amount, who knows what they're asking for. So I guess it's kind of fun to do those quizzes. I never
do. It's so tempting.
They're just gathering information about me who knows how that will be used.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good to know. And I guess there's a Facebook friend scam that's been going on that I heard of, where it's like one of your friends tells you we won something.
From time to time, Facebook users may get a friend request from an already existing friend. You know, that's probably happened to everybody who's on Facebook. And that's a fake account that's being set up by some criminal. This is just one example. A Facebook user was contacted by someone she thought was a friend that she had won a major prize, you know, the big publisher's clearinghouse prize, and all you have to do is pay the $830 up front. Well, she paid the money, and of course, that money was gone. And then she found out later that her friend's Facebook account had been hacked. So that kind of scam that we talk about coming through email or telephone call can also come through social media as well.
Okay, always something to look out for, especially when you're on the internet. We're talking to Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and we are going to be going to the phones in just a bit, and we do have an open line. So if you've got a question or comment, the number is 1-800-642-1234, and of course, you can always send an email, and that would be ideas@wpr.org. Well, actually, we're not really ready for callers yet right now, so let's just continue on. Now, the Federal Trade Commission has charged a debt collection operation with taking people's money for fake debts. Now, how did that come about, Sandy?
Well, fake debt collectors have been one of the top three national scams for years and years. And we typically don't handle debt collection. Another state agency, financial institutions, has legal authority for that. But in this case, people were making calls, posing as attorneys, and threatening to take this person to court and/or arrest them if they didn't pay. And the imposters were using the names of real businesses, you know, as a front. And there's something about getting those debt collection calls that's real scary to people. So some of these people were taken and paid the money. And how it came to light was the people who were receiving the calls called the company, the real companies, and the real company said, well, I'm not calling you. And then that was reported to the FTC, and they took action. So there are some things you can do if you get a fake debt collector call. If you should know if you owe money or not. So those calls should be reported either to us or the Department of Financial Institutions. But debt collection, again, isn't a perennial. And those calls also often target the elderly.
Yes. So they'll make them think that they have debts when they actually don't. Is that
right?
Okay. Well, I think we do have a phone call ready. We've got Bob in Madison. Hi, Bob. What's your question for us?
Well, last May, I bought a set of tires from Tire Rack in Indiana. And a week after I put them on, more of them started to leak, and so I took it in, and I thought it was because I could change from nitrogen to oxygen, and the tire pressure monitors are really sensitive. So I had the tires filled with nitrogen, and then a week later, it was down again. So I took the tire back in and had the bead resealed, and that didn't do anything. Took it back to the installer. They checked it for a leak. It kept on leaking. Eventually, I wound up taking them off because they were summer tires. So I sent the tire back into the tire rack this spring for them to check. They said they couldn't find anything wrong with it, so they sent it to Kumho, which was the manufacturer. And then they said the tire was out of warranty, and they destroyed the tire without telling me that they were going to do that. They also said that the tire, when they got it, was measured 7/32. But when it got to Kumho, it was 6.5, and they never explained how it could lose that much tread, you know, not being on a car. The tires were simply not even driven that much. They were summer tires. I got them in May and took them off in October.
Well, Michelle, what can he do about that?
Well, Bob, one of the things that you may want to do is file a complaint with us regarding the tires and the wear and the fact that the warranty. Things we'll look at as it relates to products like this are, where did the transaction take place? What type of representations were made to you? We're first going to look at the laws that relate to the actual sale of it. And then when you start getting into the quality of a product, we don't have regulations as it relates to product quality. It goes more towards that representation side of things. But there are issues if a product is unsafe or defective in that way. And then we often engage the U.S. Consumer Product Safety Commission and or the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration in this case, because it's a motor vehicle part, tires being governed by them. So regardless, we'll get your complaint. We'll do that analysis. And while we may transfer it to another agency, we'll also try and make contact with that company. And if no laws cover and no place to transfer, at minimum, we'll try and mediate a resolution in the sense by making that contact and seeing if there can be something that can be done to just resolve the situation for both parties. So you can file a complaint with us by contacting either going to our website, and that's DATCP.wi.gov, and download the form or file right there online. Or you can call our 800 number, 1-800-422-7128, and they can send a form out to you.
Okay. Well, it sounds complicated, but I'm sure calling you guys will help. This is the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network. We've been talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Do you think that you've been scammed? Give us a call. The number 1-800-642-1234, or send those emails to ideas@wpr.org. Right now, we are talking consumer protection, and we're going to go right back to the phones. Our next caller is Jan in Viroqua. Hi, Jan.
Hi. Okay. I may already have been subject to the scam with the no-call list. And what should one do?
Can you tell us a little bit more about that scam? You kind of dropped out a little bit.
I'm sorry. I got a phone message, which I returned by hitting send back to the number it had come from. It wasn't a message. I just...
On your phone? On your cell phone?
On my cell phone.
Okay.
Right. And when I returned the call, since it was an 800 number I didn't recognize, I thought I should return it and find out what was going on. And when I returned the call, I got just a message that said, regarding your no-call list. And then I just hung up on them because I had no idea what it was about and I wasn't interested.
Okay. Does that sound... like maybe it was smishing?
Well, that could be the spoofing, since it was an 800 number that she returned. And when you call our 800 number, if you don't hit a live body because all the lines are busy, or if it's after hours, we have four people answering the phone 7:45 to 4:30. But if all those lines are tied up, you'll get our message. And the first thing on the message is, hi, it's Consumer Protection. But to register for the do not call list, and it then gives the phone number to do that because we get so many contacts about that. So it's possible that that's the message she received and everything's fine then, because she was just calling us back and reached us. But it goes again to being really important to just not engage or return those phone calls. But I know that curiosity when it's an 800 number just really grabs hold of people, and you want to make sure you don't miss an important call. But if it's that important, they'll call back or they'll leave a message that gives you some details and something that you can make connections with and follow through on. So I think at this point, because no information was exchanged, I would just be okay with what happened and...
lesson learned.
Yeah.
Right. Yes. Put those curiosity down. I know that's what I always do. It's like, if that was important, they leave me a message. If they don't, well, then it isn't. So thank you very much for the call, Jan, and sharing that with us. Let's go to John in Mason. Hi, John.
Hi. I have two items. One is probably more serious than the other. I'll give you the not so serious. Well,
okay.
The other one first. This just happened to me this week. A friend of mine, a real friend, sent me a message on Facebook that with my profile picture on it, and it said John Zimmer Video Google. And so I clicked on it, and it opened up a page that was in Spanish, but you could translate it to English, so I did. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. I wonder what it is. So I clicked on it, and I was already logged into Facebook, and I got a window from Facebook, apparently, saying that in order to view the video, I had to log in. I was already logged in. But I logged in anyway, and nothing happened, and it came up again, so I did it again, and nothing happened. So then I decided, okay, I'm not going to do it. Well, then I got an alert from Facebook asking me if I was in New Jersey, and I said no, so they had me change my password. And then I got another alert asking me if I was in California, and I said no. But I didn't follow through with the rest of it because I didn't want to rechange my password again.
Oh, that doesn't sound good, does it, ladies?
Yeah. So he was tricked into handing over his login information for Facebook, and which includes a username and password. And I would also change... A lot of us use the same username and password for a lot of different accounts, so don't just change your Facebook account password. Make sure you change all your account passwords, because that can be very, very valuable information for a criminal. And many applications now, you can sign in using your Facebook login
Yes.
information, so make sure you change... In general, you should be changing your Facebook password on a regular basis and use a long, strong password, which most of us, you know.
We're terrible, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, what
but it's very easy to be fooled.
It is easy to be fooled. I mean, it really makes it sound so, yeah, well, this makes sense, right? Like he said, it was a friend, so yeah. So let's go. Oh, actually, you know, Katie on Facebook mentioned to us that she's received at least 2 smish texts in the last week or so from her doctor, quote unquote, with a web link so she could, quote unquote, update my information. She deleted the texts and blocked the number. Is that a good way to do that? Because obviously she thought they were suspicious.
Yeah, I wonder if it's from her actual doctor.
I don't know.
And in that case, she should let her doctor know that his email or something may have been hacked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
But good, very good example of somebody being cautious and not responding immediately.
Absolutely. All right. Well, let's go back to the phones. Next up, we have Julie near Rice Lake. Hi, Julie.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'm wondering about another computer thing that I encounter frequently, and that is messages that pop up, not while I'm in email or anything, but, you know, might be word processing program saying, I need to update my software, or I need to update, you know, my virus detector system or something like this. Can you give me any tips for knowing whether these are legitimate or not? Because sometimes they look very legitimate. They say they're from, you know, Macintosh, or they say that they're from Microsoft, et cetera.
Yeah, so we are not the computer tech gurus to be able to necessarily see. And the crooks and criminals are incredibly talented at making them look identical to the legitimate ones. What I can say is that you need to initiate the update. You do get pop-ups that there's a new software update, but your computer will do that through your settings and your applications aspect of the computer, not through pop-ups during internet live sessions. It will just do that from the foundation of your computer when there's a software update, as well as you can set your virus protection to do automatic updates if you're leaving it on when something becomes available in that profile settings. So, you know, different techniques to do or different ways to handle that is on a regular basis every month, you're going to go search for updates and then put them in place in your own manual process, or set the profile to automatically update when they become available, and you just ignore all those pop-ups because you can control it through the settings of your virus protection that you have available if you want. I don't know if you have other suggestions as well, Sandy, to complement that.
Yeah, some of the antivirus packages will renew on an annual basis, or you can buy 2-year packages, and you will get a pop-up when it's time to renew. But instead of clicking the link in the pop-up, I always go to my software brand and renew through that, because then I know that I'm not following some criminal, you know, down that path. I'm actually where I need to be.
That makes a lot of sense. And if anybody has any questions about how they can do settings that Michelle was talking about, our computer specialist is on Monday. So give us a call then if you have any questions, and I'm sure Peter Green can help you out with that. Our next call is from Teresa in Green Bay. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. In the last, I'd say 7 to 10 days, I would say at least 12, 13 calls about credit cards and I hang up right away. No, I first yell at them, and then I hang up. But I don't give them any information. And I'm just wondering, now, I have AT&T. I enter the number in this AT&T number, and they put it on, they freeze my account regarding that number. So they shouldn't be calling me back a second time. But is there a reason why I'm getting so many calls? Because I checked to see which numbers they were, and they were all different.
So, Teresa, one thing that these con artists do is they buy different lists in order to know who to target and make phone calls to. So you could actually be getting phone calls from all sorts of different individuals that would then have different numbers. The other thing that they do is if you're getting the phone call from the same source, they buy a number of phone numbers in order to make the calls from. I mean, thousands of phone numbers. It's pretty easy to get a SIM card and change it out and auto-dialing. But like legitimate telemarketers, they kind of have call banks that they're just calling from, and it's hundreds of phone numbers that they're dialing from. So you could be getting calls from the same company or different companies all on the same issue, and they're just targeting your area right now and your area code and kind of just bombarding you is two different ways. So you're going to want to block every single phone number. But remember, they can also make any phone number appear on your caller ID. So that's the extra complication there. So keep not engaging. Best just not to answer if you can do that. Set a policy with friends and family that you'll answer the phone once they start to leave a message. So give me a minute to grab the phone when I hear your voice. If you can tolerate that, is a good practice to put in place to keep yourself from engaging with these phone calls.
Because if she even says, you know, don't call me anymore, that automatically says, oh, there's a real person there, right?
Absolutely. So yeah. She ends up on a different kind of list that says live bodies, you know,
call
kind
some
of
more.
Thing.
Call some more.
So that list becomes just a little bit more valuable than the other just generic phone number list.
We talked a lot last time we were on last month about how to block these unwanted calls. And there are different things you can use depending on whether you have a mobile phone or old-fashioned landline or the new voice-over internet where you have a phone modem. But the Federal Trade Commission now is taking the numbers consumers report receiving these fraudulent calls from and sharing them with the companies that do the call blocking software on a daily basis. And our consumer complaints also feed into that FTC system. So this is another example of how important it is for people to let us know, report those fraudulent calls, because in the end, it's now going to be fed into the software that's used to block the fraudulent calls, and people's phones hopefully we'll stop ringing eventually.
Eventually. And what's the number again that can call to report that?
That's 1-800-422-7128, and we'll send you out a form. But a really easy way to report those phone numbers any time of day is at datcp.wi.gov. And in the complaints, choose the no-call fast-track complaint form. And there's only about 3-5 questions to answer. One of them is your phone number that received the call and the phone number that made the call that you got the call from, or just a description of the call. And it's just real simple. We won't write you back, but we'll research every phone number. We'll report every phone number to the Federal Trade Commission. But it's a very condensed way of just fast reporting this information.
Really important information, too. We had Justin in Milwaukee send us an email. He said that they canceled their cable internet provider and believe that they had settled the last bill, but they're still getting calls and bills. And when they do call back, they say everything is settled and it will take a few days for it to clear. And this has been happening for 3 months now. What can he do about that?
Well, he could file a complaint with us. And as Michelle explained a little earlier, we often work as an intermediary between the consumer and a company's customer service department, and our complaints usually go to the top of their inbox, which is nice for consumers. But sometimes it does take time for all this to settle out. But it sounds like he's frustrated, and he should absolutely feel free to give us a call, and we'll make a contact on his behalf.
Okay. Let's go back to the phones. We have Kate Manasha, who has a question for you. Hi, Kate.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just tuned in, so I apologize if this isn't the right forum to be asking this question. I think this you might be dealing mostly with calls, but this is an email issue. I just recently joined our neighborhood online community forum. It's called Next Door. You might know about it. And so it's only been a week or so. There's a participant that is inappropriate, and been posting offensive articles, etc., that individual can be blocked, which I've done. Other participants that are commenting on this as well, it seems like whoever this is changing their identity and then coming back and continuing to post inappropriate things. I didn't know if there's anything that the administrator of this forum can do about that. Is there a law against that kind of thing? So I guess that's my question, if you understand what I'm trying to get across.
Do they have any recourse, Michelle?
I'm aware of this app. I'm not super, I've never used it
Sandy,
myself.
But Sandy is speaking right now. I'm looking right at her. I should have known.
But that. On Facebook and most social media, there's some kind of option you can use to report inappropriate activity to the home company. And that may be what you want to do in this case. So they can actually block the email address they're using to set up these accounts and shifting identities. So that's something you can check in the FAQs or help or for users or whatever that section is on the app.
Okay. Well, good luck, Kate, because that's got to be annoying when you're just trying to have a nice friendly conversation. Up next, we have Pam in Fond du Lac. Hi, Pam. What do you have for us?
Good morning. I'm looking for some advice. We have a family member. They live in Waukesha County in an apartment complex managed by Equity Property Management. And weeks ago, one of their vehicles was inappropriately towed. And they've been going back and forth with the tow company. The property management company has said, yes, the car was legally parked. It shouldn't have been towed. However, the tow company has refused to release the car, and it's escalated to the point that they've seen this person around their vehicles. He put rocks on the tires. And this morning at 1 a.m., he came back and towed a second vehicle from the family that was also permitted, legally parked, in their apartment complex. The police department has said that they can't do anything because it's a civil matter, that it's on private property, but the police department also said they've received 25 complaints from others who have been towed by this tow company. So what can they do to get their vehicles back?
That's horrible. What can they do, Michelle?
Well, they should contact an attorney to put an order in place to stop the contact. It is one of the first things. Not being an attorney, there are formal ways of putting those orders in place that a lawyer can help them do before the courts. And write letters first if they don't want to end up escalating it to the courts. That's going to be the first option there. And they've already engaged law enforcement, but if it's happening on not private property, that would be another means. Talk to the landlord as well to see if engaging the landlord about not having the tow company come to the property, that could also be an option depending upon if they have, you know, a contractual relationship or anything. But, you know, you can, through goodwill, just try and engage the landlord to see if there's a way that they can assist with this matter, even if they do have a contractual relationship.
All right. Thank you. We're talking today about consumer protection. If you have a question, our phone lines are open. So give us a call, 800-642-1234. You can also send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And we did get an email that came in from Darcy. Apparently, she received several letters from her actual credit card company saying, we're unable to approve your request for a Amazon.com Visa credit card at this time because no accounts have been open long enough to establish a credit history. Darcy says she hasn't applied for a Visa card, and the letters, while they're coming to her street address, are addressed to a person that is not her. She's reported this to her credit card company and frozen her credit reports at the three companies that do this, but continue to get the same basic letter about once a month. She's never heard of someone else having the same situation. What can or should she do?
I think one of the first things to do is, there are many first steps that need to be taken probably today. Run a credit report. She's frozen her information, and that's great. No more extensions of credit. But let's run a credit report to see what information's out there, what may have already happened. Contact our consumer protection so you can get information about identity theft and have all this detailed out for you. 1-800-422-7128 is the number you'll call, or you can go on to our website and get all the fact sheets there. Contact and file a police report, because that then generates different rights for you to access information. Because if you then file a complaint with Consumer Protection, we'll contact the Amazon to see who has submitted this application, what signatures are on that, and you can then hand that over to the police department as well. So if they choose to investigate this matter further, but she needs to see the extent of what's happening beyond maybe just this Amazon activity.
Okay, so get that credit report first.
And I would also contact your credit card company, and they would, I would think, want to issue you a new credit card with a new number.
Another good precaution. Now, she had talked about freezing her account, and we've talked about this before, but why don't you talk a little bit about what that is, how to do it, and why it's important?
So it's called a security freeze that you can put in place, and consumers, if they are not victims of identity theft, will need to pay to put that in place. It's $10, and you contact each of the three major credit reporting agencies, Experian, Equifax, and TransUnion. We have the information on our website, but what that does is freezes your credit report and prevents anyone from taking out any extensions of credit in your name. So they won't be able to get new credit cards. They may not be, you know, no utilities, no satellite or cable in your name. It prevents that piece, the financial aspect of identity theft. It doesn't stop someone from draining your bank account if you've given out your banking information or, you know, using your social security number to get a job, but it does prevent the credit financial aspect of identity theft from happening or continuing. Then if you decide that you need to go get a loan to buy a new car, you will need to thaw that. So you work with your lender to determine where they're going to check your credit report, and you contact that credit reporting agency or two and put that 3-day temporary thaw on, and there'll be a fee for that as well, but you get a PIN and a password, and it's real easy to put that thaw in place, and it's a protection to combat some of the data breaches that happen when your information is being obtained and you don't know how it's being used. So it's a tool.
Is there a cost to put the freeze on?
Yeah, it's $10 for each of the three credit reporting agencies. So up to $30 is what you'd end up paying. Now, if you're a victim of identity theft, it is free for you to do this.
Okay, well, it's certainly worth it. You're listening to The Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry today. And we've been talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Do you think you've been scammed? Do you have a question about some kind of consumer problem? Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. We're talking about consumer protection problems, and we're going to go right back to the phones. We've got Susan and Marion waiting. Hi, Susan.
Hi.
What's your question?
I always listen to the show, and you happen to have the consumer ladies on. And while I was listening, I think I got ransomware on my computer.
Oh, dear.
Just like that.
What happened?
And I was looking at a website, and that went away. This alert came up, and it said that something happened, and I have to call the Microsoft helpline, which I don't think that's the number.
No.
To unlock my computer.
We've heard that before, haven't we? You have,
yes,
I'm sure.
Have. Yeah. I've heard it on this program.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that's...
And the alert thing went away, but I can't do anything, and it said if I shut down, I'll never be able to open my computer again. Call Microsoft.
Right.
And I know it's not their number, but now the alert's not up, and I don't remember the number they put down.
Okay, but...
Okay, should I just take my computer to a place and get it fixed?
We've had their computer people on before have said that more than likely there's nothing wrong. It's just a hoax. And if you do close out and come back in, you should be fine.
Restart or reboot.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes you can restore to a previous date, whatever she's more familiar with. And then if that doesn't work, you can call a friend who knows more than you do. And we're all in that position from time to time. Or else call a computer repair shop.
I was planning on doing that, so there's nothing I can really report about these people. And no way to, like, I don't know, hit them in the head with a hatchet.
Not at this point, given that information cleared out. But the good news is you didn't pay anything. You didn't give them access to anything. So that's the good part, that part of the message. That's what we're really looking for. But, yeah, in us stopping them, that's past. We need to just make sure you recover from the frozen computer.
Okay.
Well, thank you for your help. I'll try the reboot, I'll just try the boot.
Thank you, Susan. Remember, Peter Green's here on Monday, so if something happens, give us a call again. All right. Next up, we've got Michael, in Green Bay. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thank you. What's your question?
All right. I used the Discover credit card for checking my credit score, and it works very well. And knowing how their system works, recently I've been getting a notification coming to me, which appears to be from Discover, and it says, check out or discover your new scorecard. And Discover calls it a scorecard. But when I hit on it, my phone does a really good job at detecting abnormal things happening. And on the screen, it says, by logging in, your information will not be kept private. And I'm like, well, why would I log in if my information isn't going to be kept private, you know, with Discover? And the screen, when the screen comes up, it's not as clear. There's something fake about it. But I could really see anybody who uses Discover, that system for checking your score, that I think they're getting a lot of people on this, and I would not feed into that until people figure out what's going on with Discover. So they send me a notification, and they're telling me to discover your new scorecard. There is no new scorecard, and I'm just telling people don't feed into that at this point until they get that figured out.
Thanks, Michael. Have either of you heard of that?
Not that particular one, but there are so many just like this. And when you're the criminal blasting out millions and millions of text messages or emails out every day, through the luck of the draw, you're going to hit somebody who actually has the Discover credit scorecard, who might, you know, fall victim to that. So these scammers tend to use the well-known, well-respected companies like the major banks, credit card companies, the major retailers like Best Buy and Walmart, Target, stores that everybody shops at from time to time, because they're more likely to get a hit from an unsuspecting victim.
Well, thank you for sharing that, Michael. Let's go to Joanne in Rhinelander. Hi, Joanne.
Hello.
What's going on with you?
Okay, I recently had a warranty part replaced on my Jeep. The part is called a cross member. It's a part of the suspension. And I had it done at the local dealership. And when I got my bill, and even before then, the service manager had said, well, I may be responsible for some bolts that they may have to cut off. Well, I was okay with some bolts. Not really. But my bill when I picked up my Jeep was $979. Some other parts were replaced by the technician that he felt were rusted, and I was not notified of any of this. And I've been calling Chrysler, trying to get some reimbursement. I've been calling the local dealership where I took my Jeep. And yesterday I called your agency, and I will be getting a form in the mail. And I'm really grateful for all of this. And I'm grateful to hear about your agency. And I have every confidence that they're going to be helpful to me.
Well, that's great, Joanne. You did exactly what you're supposed to be doing, right, Michelle?
She did. And so for the other listeners to kind of explain our side of, I wasn't on Joanne's call, but based on what she just explained, the state of Wisconsin has an auto repair law in place. And it says one of the basic things that are in place is that consumers have to give authorization for the repair. That authorization can be, don't do anything until I get an estimate. You can't do anything that's going to cost any money. The other basic line, and you have to sign one of these if you drop off the vehicle in person during regular hours. The middle one is go ahead, repair what needs to be because I've given you a guesstimate of what's wrong and up to a dollar value. And you and the technician or whoever you drop the car off with decide what that reasonable dollar value is. If it's an oil change plus kind of a tune-up, you're going to say the $150 or whatever it is. But then there's the blanket authorization. Go ahead, it's broken, just fix it, money doesn't matter, it's the big one. So that's a requirement that has to be put down in writing. You sign one of these three alternatives in that face-to-face. So that's where we're going to start with Joanne's situation is, what authorization was provided at the time she dropped off the vehicle? And I know we're, talking warranty work, but if they're going to charge her, there has to be this permission. Now, in the absence of the face-to-face drop-off, there can be phone authorizations, and those need to be documented on repair orders and things. But that's where we're going to start with the communication with the auto dealer on that.
Okay. Well, hopefully everything will turn out well for you, Joanne. Next up, we have Lydia in calling from Manitowoc. Hi, Lydia.
Hi. So I'm calling because I got a phone call, and on my caller ID, it said the Social Security Department. So this man was talking very fast. I am on disability, and he's telling me that I have to be at a meeting in Milwaukee tomorrow at 9 o'clock. And I'm just like, well, I can't get there tomorrow morning, and I'm just very flustered. And he said, so he reiterated that I needed to be at this meeting, and he asked me for my Social Security number. And because it said on my caller ID, Social Security, I gave him my number. And I got off the phone, and I said, oh, my gosh, I gave him my number. I called the Social Security Department right away, and they said they would never call me and ask me for my Social Security number for any reason. And so this was shortly after I went on disability, so I'm wondering if there's also some way that they knew that, if the scammers can find that out, and also to let people know you cannot go by the caller ID, who it is. I found that out. So I did what you're talking about is I went to all the credit departments, TransUnion, and all of them, and I actually was able to put a 7-year. They only wanted to do it for 90 days where no one could get credit with my Social Security, and I did go through whatever I needed to actually make it 7 years instead of the 90 days.
Okay. Well, That Lydia's isn't the first story you've heard like that, is it, Sandy?
No, and over the past 2 or 3 years, I would say there's been an absolute explosion in the number of criminals posing as government agencies, whether it's Medicare, IRS, State Patrol, and now us, even us. And they do that for a purpose. You know, they scared her to death and mm-hmm. kind of put her back on her heels, and then she was vulnerable and she handed over her private information. I would recommend that she call our toll-free number, 800-422-7128, and talk through what she's done so far, and we can see if there are any gaps, anything that she should be doing to make sure that her identity is protected and secure.
Thank you so much, Lydia, for sharing that with us. We've been talking about consumer fraud and scams, and there's more information to come, so stay with us on the Ideas Network. Hi, this is Jill Nadeau filling in for Larry Mueller today. So glad you could be with us on the Ideas Network. Our consumer protection experts are back with us. Sandy Chalmers is Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Do you have a consumer question? Well, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email at ideas@wpr.org. And of course, always you can post on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. And we do have open lines, so we'd love to hear from you. So give us a call. Let's go. A couple of things, housekeeping, just to clean up before we go to the phones. Someone wanted to know again what the companies are that we need to call to have our credit report frozen or credit frozen.
So the three major credit reporting agencies are Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And to put a security freeze in place, you need to contact each of those individually. If you're just trying to put a fraud alert on where you're just going to get notifications of use of trying to get extensions of credit, you just contact one of them and they contact all three. But this information's on our website, kind of a one-source place to make it easier. And our website for filing complaints or getting fact sheets is datcp.wi.gov. So that's our department initials, datcp.wi.gov. Or you can call our 800 number, 1-800-422-7128, and we'll send publications out to you. We're there 7:45 to 4:30, Monday through Friday.
Okay. And you can always leave a message, right?
That's right. After hours, and we'll return the call the next day.
All right. And we will, when we get a chance, we will put that up on our Facebook page, too. So you can just go right there and get a direct link. But right now, we have Arlene on the phone calling from New Berlin. Hi, Arlene. Arlene.
I guess good afternoon to you ladies.
It is.
I'm kind of calling about the lady that called to you before. I have a landline in my house or from my cable company. I also have a voicemail machine attached to my phone. And I'm on the no-call list, but I still get calls. So I guess if people have a voicemail machine, the only thing they have to do is make sure it rings four times and say on the phone, I can come to the phone right now, but if you want to leave a message, you can, and I will call you back later. The minute those guys at the robocall call you, they will not leave a message. And I'll tell you this, I'm going to hold on to my landline phone for as long as I possibly can. I don't need to be interrupted every single day, and I'll take my answer off the air.
Thank you, Arlene. So a vote for landlines and voice answering machines, basically.
Yeah, answering machines are a great way to screen your calls, and it's great that she has a plan. And I think very few of us now jump up when the phone rings the way we used to, because chances are it's some kind of fraudulent call. If she has a phone through her cable company, she can sign up for Nomo Robo, which is a service we've talked about many times in the past. But you go to the website nomorobo.com and you sign up for their service, and you need to be logged into your cable website as well, your cable account. But that service blacklists fraudulent calls, and your phone will ring once and then just stop. So it's a great service. Her plan is great for her. It sounds like it works very well, and she's happy with it. But what we hear most from people is that they can't stand the phone ringing all day. So that would be the negative
yes,
side to her plan.
It would. We had talked just earlier about the fact that people go on vacation in August a lot. We are now in August, and we tend to be a little bit maybe less vigilant when we're on vacation, and we could open ourselves up for ID fraud. What are some of the things that we could look for when we're out on vacation?
So, yes, you're right. Our guards are down. It's that last-minute vacation, too, if you have kids
sure.
and are going back to school. But some of the things you need to do are the same things you need to do when you're not on vacation, and that's keep your software up to date. And what we mean by that is your operating system on your tablet devices, on your smartphones, on your computer. You should do that as a regular practice at home, but if you're going to be traveling, be sure that those are up to date. And know what settings you have in your preferences as it relates to location services. Do you automatically connect to free and public Wi-Fi? And be conscious about what you're doing and what those applications do. Do they track your locations? Are they gathering data about your travel if your location services are on and you're using those apps? If you're just checking a bank account real quick because you want to make sure you have enough limit on your credit card that you're about to buy some big purchase, you know, that's a private site. You want to make sure you're secure. You don't want to be logging in on a public Wi-Fi spot. So know if you're hooked up to a secure site or if you're just using that public Wi-Fi and being conscious of those things. But keeping all those operating systems up to date. And then there's the pre-travel plans as well that you need to be cautious of as it relates to identity theft. And we've talked about that in different references today, those imposter websites. So there, you want to avoid the international travel document scams. And the Federal Trade Commission just recently issued some information about this, that there's official-looking websites offering travel documents, information, and services, but these are really imposter websites. So no different than an imposter Target or Walmart or someone trying to get your money. Here they're trying to get your personal information when you're just trying to get ready for that vacation and make sure that you have all the proper documentation you need. But if you're at that site, you're going to be giving over a lot of personal information that you don't want.
All right.
To give out.
Okay. Yeah. And we don't want our vacation ruined, that's for sure. All right. On the phone, we have Lindsay, and she's calling from Appleton. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
What do you have for us?
Okay. So this is an interesting situation. My husband has a business partner who brought something to our attention. My husband and I have really good credit. We have a lot of credit cards that are open that we don't use because it makes our used credit amount very low compared to what we have available, and it helps to keep our credit score very high. My question is that we've been approached to go with a company, to use a company that attaches a stranger's name as an authorized user to one of our cards that never gets used, and they stay on the card for 3 months in order to boost their credit score, and I think it's called BoostMyScore.com or something, and then we in turn would receive monetary compensation in the amount of approximately like $140 or $150 per person that we allow to sit as an authorized user on our credit card. And I'm curious if you know anything about this, if this is valid, if it's even legal. And I know his business partner has been doing it for a very long time, and it's a lucrative source of income for their family, and they take vacations and everything because of it. And I'm worried. Do you have any input?
Oh, Michelle.
So I haven't heard of this, but as you're explaining it, I was just making painful facial features. No, there are things that I would be concerned with. We're not the financial aspect of consumer protection in the sense of credit scores and banking regulation. But things that I would question is if you are putting a different authorized user on your account and they default and don't do something, to me, depending upon the agreement that's in place, you're going to be responsible for that. And if you don't know this person, you're not going to know their spending habits to know what controls or monitoring and, you know, what agreement is in place that can you cancel or back out of this relationship that you've formed. So there's a lot of questions that I would have before entering this. And it seems to me that they can harm your credit because you'll become responsible for this as well. So I don't know about its legality or not, because it seems as though if you give authorization for someone to use a card, you can enter any kind of relationship. But I would do a lot more questioning, maybe contact the Department of Financial Institutions for guidance or a credit counselor as well, or even your own bank. Lots of different sources for information there.
It sounds a little sketchy, so do your facts, Lindsay. Thank you for calling and sharing that with us. Up next, we have Kathy in Wausau. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
What's your question?
I had a question. I was listening to the conversation about credit card freezes, and I'm just wondering, then they said you could call back in and unfreeze it if you wanted to do something. What would be the safeguards in place that a criminal would just call back and say, okay, and pretend to be you and say, okay, I want to unfreeze this account now? And I'll take my comments off.
Okay, thank you, Kathy.
So when you set up and establish your security freeze, you're given a PIN and a password that you control. I believe you can change your password that goes with your PIN information. So the thing that prevents a criminal from impersonating you is your protection of that PIN and password, you keeping it up to date and keeping it protected. So if someone gains access to that, then yes, they would probably have that potential to thaw that freeze in place and take out a credit card. But it's set up with many layers of security. You're going to have to know information about yourself. You're going to have to know unique information, that PIN and password, and go from there.
So it seems to work just fine.
We haven't heard complaints of people having issues
great,
with that.
Great. We're talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen from the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We do have a couple of open lines, so if you have a consumer complaint you want to talk about, please give us a call at 1-800-642-1234, or you can always send an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Sandy and Michelle, we did have someone that posted on our Facebook page regarding to student loan forgiveness program. Are you familiar with any of these programs? Apparently it says you only have to pay half and you must do it now because this was something that Obama started and might end soon. Doesn't sound legit to me, but you're the experts. What do you think, Sandy?
There are a lot of phony debt consolidation I don't know what to call them, organizations out there. And we all know how much it costs to go to school now. And a lot of people have a lot of debt. And the criminals know that and are know, as always, where people are most vulnerable. And they may target people, you know, they usually know how old you are because that's publicly available on Facebook.
And
so it's not that difficult to get that information and target an age group that is very likely to have a large amount of debt.
Okay. So more than likely, no.
Be very careful.
Okay. That sounds good. We also wanted to talk a little bit about the FCC has put out a warning about the possibility of downloading unwanted, sometimes malicious software when you download popular free software. So how can we avoid doing something like that?
Well, there's a lot of free software out there, and kids are especially vulnerable to this. You know, it may be advertised as part of a game or something that's usually also free, but always go to a reputable source like the iTunes or Google Play or somewhere like that to get your software. You should always look to make sure it may come in a bundle. So you may get your free software and something else that you didn't want that may be the malicious piece of the bundle. So don't just accept everything. You know, click through and make sure that you are ordering exactly what you want. But really, don't click on pop-ups or banner ads offering free software. Go to reputable sources and keep your security software up to date. And that includes your phone and tablets and other devices as well. And you'll most likely be okay.
Okay, great tips. We did have a caller who couldn't stay on the line, but they were asking that when using a credit card online, how do you make sure that it's reputable and secure? And what do you look for when you do that?
There are many tips. You can sometimes not always know 100%. But one thing you want to do is know that you're not at an imposter site. So look at where you're at. Think about how you got there. Is it because you typed in the information and you know you're at, we'll just say, target.com? Or did you use a link? And so now you might be at one of those imposter locations where you're going to give the information. So another thing you can do is hover over the information to see where you're at. Does it align and match as it should when you hover over that information? Are you actually seeing what you think you should see there? And then when you're actually at the transaction stage, if you're entering a PIN or a password or any username, you should be on a secure portion of the website. And so you should see the HTTPS, that S for security. In that same bar, you could see a padlock, a lock. If you see a lock anywhere on the website, that's not the same thing. You want to make sure it's up in the web bar there. And then when you're entering credit card information, you want to see that same thing. You're still in the secure location of the website. You haven't been diverted somewhere that's not secure. Those are a few basic things. Before you start any of this, Sandy just said it, make sure your operating system is up to date and that you've run your virus protection to make sure no one's monitoring you. You don't have any malware loaded on your computer that way.
That little bar up on top is actually really important, isn't it? Because that can tell you if you're at a legitimate website also, can't, right?
Mm-hmm. Michelle talked about hovering. So you may get a text or a email. You can hover over links or the return address and see what the actual return address is. And that's a pretty good tip off. Instead of .com, it will be the address for a foreign country, you know, in Western Africa or something like that, and in Asia. So that's another thing you can do.
Okay. And some of the other things, we go to social media all the time, and we were talking about that earlier, and there's a Twitter scam that you had brought to our attention too. Do you want to talk about that, Michelle?
Sure. This is from actually a magazine article in November. It's called an angler phishing scheme, but it's through a Twitter scam. So the crooks impersonate the social media team of a bank or a retailer in order to trick consumers into disclosing personal or sensitive information. So it's not really the bank contacting you. It's this, the media team, the impersonator there. And then consumers, the way it works is consumers will post to a business Twitter account for help. So that's become our means of communication now, just doing these quick posts. And the imposter accounts then contact the consumer claiming that they represent. Oh, so they're a go-between. They get in the middle on this and impersonate, act as though they are with them. And then they direct you to phony web pages that, again, are made to look like the real bank or retail site, whoever you're doing the business with. You enter your login, password information, maybe your banking information as well, depending upon how extensive the fake website is. And now you've just handed over your information to these crooks. So again, the scams come in all forms, whether it be by phone, social media, email, websites. you know, we didn't even talk about mail today, but it, right. There's still the traditional form.
Tricky. Well, we do have another call waiting. Hannah in Janesville. Hi, Hannah. Oops, we just lost Hannah, so we're not quite sure what her question was. But is there a few things, you know, you were just kind of talking about all the things people should be aware of, and one of those scamming things that's been around for quite a while now is the IRS scam. What, tell us a little bit about that. They remind us again, because there are, I'm sure there's people that haven't heard about it.
Well, in most cases, somebody will call you and threaten, claim to be from the IRS. It may be a robocall or it may be a live person. They may give you a badge number or a name, you know, to pretend that they're legitimate. And then they'll threaten you with some kind of immediate action, like we're coming to arrest you. We're setting our court date right now. You need to pay us immediately. Anytime you get, especially a phone call with a threat, you need to pay us immediately, your guard should go up, no matter who they say they are. And people, unfortunately, have lost millions of dollars to this scam over the last 2 or 3 years. And it's really unfortunate. But we talk about it a lot, but we continue to remind people because people are still falling victim to this scam.
And there was something was changed not too long ago. The IRS is contracting with other debt collectors, but you hear they don't call you.
Right.
Like that,
and there's
right?
going to be a long process where you'll receive several letters explaining this company will be contacting you by this method, you know, within this time frame. So it's not going to be a call out of the blue.
Okay. And I apologize, we didn't get to a lot of the phone calls today. We're having a little problem with our phones. But we did have somebody waiting who tried to freeze his credit but is having a problem. Is there some place where they can go to get help on that?
Certainly. Just contact our 800 number, 1-800-422-7128. They'll probably have you file a complaint and we can try and help assist with that information and do that mediary work that we do.
Okay, and the website again?
Is datcp.wi.gov. That's how to contact us, you know, 24/7. Your other option right now is we are at State Fair. The department has a booth, so you can come. We have staff there during the day, so if you have questions, go there and talk to our staff, and they can help you on the spot.
Well, excellent.
We're in the Farm and Family Building.
Yes, of course you are. That's a perfect spot for you. We've been talking with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen. Sandy is the Assistant Deputy Secretary with the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection, and Michelle is the Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection within the Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Thanks to our executive producer, Michelle Johnson, and to Dave Potraz for technical direction. Please join us tomorrow for another edition of Garden Talk. Mark Dwyer from the Janesville Rotary Gardens will be here to answer your gardening question. That's tomorrow at 11 and Saturday at 7. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Stay with us.